miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps cry on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Revolution Radio, it's Saturday, and it's time for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show with your host, Scorpio. Plus a little honey on the lone highway. Let me pour another.
Hello, and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, December 12, 2020. We are cooking through this year fast, about to enter into 2021. Whoa. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, here we are, guys, entering into a new era. The era of the Groper Joe presidency. Oh, yeah. Joey, the Groper Biden, is coming to town. And I think we need to start giving all these politicians, you know, mob nicknames, right? Because that's what they really are. They're mobsters and gangsters. These are not legitimate politicians working for the good of the country or the people. And speaking of gangsters, have you guys seen any pictures of Joe Biden's brother, Jimmy Biden, Jimmy the Knuckles Biden? I mean, this guy looks like an OG gangster right out of the Sopranos. And that's no joke. And his wife too, man. She looks like a mob wife. Yeah. We're dealing with some real gangsters here now, guys, and it's time to see through a lot of illusions that we've been fed for so many years. El Gropo, that's pretty good from the chat room, Tara. El Gropo, yeah, there we go. Yeah, Groper Joe and his brother, Jimmy the Knuckles Biden. Man, right out of the Sopranos. You should check out those pictures of him, man. It's too much. Yeah, so we got Joey the Groper Biden and his trusty sidekick, Kamala the Hoover Harris. Oh, yeah. Kamala the Hoover Harris. Soon to be President Harris, I believe. Yes, soon to be President Harris. Because guess what? Old Groper Joe isn't going to be around too long. It doesn't look that way. They are already conditioning our minds for this eventuality. And really, if you think about it, that is the only purpose of the enemy war footage known as the corporate news. Its only purpose is to soften our minds and condition us for what is coming, for what has already been planned. Oh, yeah. So that's why Joey the Groper recently fell. And, you know, when the story first broke, he hurt his ankle. Then it was a foot injury. And, of course, playing with his dog, you know, just to add a little element of sweetness into the whole thing. What a wonderful guy. He was playing with his dog, and he hurt his foot. But meanwhile, President Trump doesn't even have a dog, and he kicks puppies, by the way. He kicks puppies. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe some of you guys have seen the pictures of Groper Joe's leg brace. It's been on both legs. This leg brace, it's been on both legs. They kind of just switched it around like magic, is back and forth between both legs. So to me, it was sort of an indication that this was just a scripted event. you know, to soften our minds, to plant the seed that Joey the Groper, he's an old man, and he may not be around too long. They're getting us ready, guys. Just imagine, Groper Joe has been a public servant for 47 years. 47 years. And I'm sure there are people listening to this broadcast who weren't even born 47 years ago, right? So this old clown, this old criminal has been in office longer than many people have been alive. And look at all the good he's done, man. Amazing. But I believe this will be the last performance for Groper Joe, his grand finale. And I believe a performance that won't last very long. Yeah, then it's time to say hello to President Harris, Kamala Knee Pads Harris. Yeah, it'll be a historic presidency, the first woman of color, blah, 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 blah. And her heroic effort to pick up the pieces of the nation after the untimely death or incapacitation of Groper Joe. Oh, yeah, she's going to be a hero. And a heroic figure and a historic figure. And guess what, guys? If you don't like her agenda, you are a racist and a misogynist. Yeah, so you better just keep your mouth shut. Uh-huh. Oh, boy. So anyway, guys, you know, I've been predicting this Groper Joe victory for months now, as people that have been listening to my show already know, not because I want Groper Joe, obviously, to be president, but they've been dropping, you know, little hints and breadcrumbs for us to follow to lead us to that conclusion. And he's going to be the next president by hook or by crook, as the saying goes. Even though it's the greatest election fraud our country has ever witnessed, the greatest fraud ever, but certainly not the first fraudulent election, I think we've been played by this this voting scam for a long time, guys. I really do. And here's the thing, you know, it's important to look at, you know, world events, political events, from the perspective of the conspirators, not from our own perspective, because that's the key to see what is coming. We've got to look at things outside of our own filter. I mean, we all see the world through our own filter. All of us do it. But from time to time, we've got to look at things from another perspective. From the perspective of the conspirators, if you want to see what's coming at us at warp speed, guys. And I think there's several meanings to that little term. It's not just about vaccines. They're getting us ready for things to be changing very quickly. And, you know, one of Trump's, President Trump's biggest flaws has been his unwillingness to get aboard the climate agenda. And make no mistake, this climate agenda, the climate change agenda, and the COVID agenda are one in the same. They are the same agenda. Because when you boil it down and distill it, the climate change agenda essentially represents, you know, a complete control of world assets, of all resources, and a control of all four elements, isn't it? Yeah. Water, earth, fire, and air, all under the control of a global crime syndicate, because that's what it is. a global crime syndicate based on the essentially black magic of central banking. Because without the achemical, the alchemical power of central banking, they couldn't pull off any of these scams. Not one of them. Not one of them. That is the root cause of all of this. So yeah, look, the climate change agenda represents sort of the macro level, right? The control of all world resources on a macro scale, all energy, all resources. And the, kind of what I've been seeing recently is that, you know, the COVID agenda, it represents the micro level on the individual level, the control over the individual. So we got the macro and the micro working together here, guys. One agenda to regulate and control every individual's actions and thoughts. And that should be coming, you know, painfully obvious by now what that is. It's the control over the individual. You know, I mean, look, we've got these governors and mayors telling people not to travel for the holidays. Don't go to work. Stay home. Stay home. It's too dangerous. Yeah, can you say smaller carbon footprint? Oh, isn't that convenient, huh? And here we already have governors and mayors telling people where they can go, when they can go, who they can do it with, and even going so far as telling you to put your mask on between bites. Put your mask on between bites. I mean, how much more of this bullshit are people gonna take? For real. Yeah. So obviously, from the point of view of the conspirators, you know, we can't have a world leader who questions climate change or resists the coming agenda of the new Green Deal. And, you know, this morning I heard a clip of, some head woman in the EU commissioner or something like that. I don't remember the title, but she was talking about the Europe's new Green Deal. So, I mean, we really are seeing the unveiling of a global government, a global agenda, where all the governments worldwide are working together for the same causes. And yeah, so look, it looks like old Trump is out, man. You know, big surprise. I'm not surprised that the Supreme Court ruled against him. But there are several ways to look at Trump, you know, kind of in a post-Trump era. One, he was a wild card, you know, an accidental president, an outsider who really stirred up the muck and angered the swamp creatures. That's possibility number one. Number two, he was an actor on a stage who was in on the scam and was merely playing a role. And possibility number three, behind door number three, that Trump was sincere and wanted to help America, but he was controlled through blackmail, his debts, and the threat of losing his empire and whatever other skeletons might have been in his closet. So those are the three basic possibilities. And you could kind of mix the three together, you know, but those are the main possibilities there. But look, you know, no matter which option you pick, the end result was essentially the same. We had a president who was not able to do much other than talk. He did a lot of talking, a lot of bluster, but with very few results. Very few results. He did keep us out of the Paris Climate Accord. And he built, a few hundred miles of the wall. But really not enough to make any significant difference, you know? Snippet says she's going to take door number 3. All right. Yeah. It's possible. Yeah. But the end result's the same. The wall, a little bit of the wall got built, but not enough to make much difference, you know, enough to maybe move the traffic east or west, depending on where the little section was built. But, you know, I used to live very close to the border when I lived in the high desert in San Diego County. And I'll just tell you, there's miles upon miles of absolutely no fence, not even a marker between the two countries. It goes on for miles and miles throughout the desert. It's amazing. So yeah, many people were hoping that the court system was going to rectify this obviously fraudulent election. But here we have a legal system that is so deeply corrupt that I really don't think we should expect much of anything positive from it. And this is nothing new. You know, I kind of remember back when, they had the proposition to say, no, California, we don't want gay marriage. You know, and it was voted on in a referendum, and it passed. Even in California, people did not want gay marriage. But then what happened? A judge who just happened to be homosexual overturned the referendum and said, no, you will have gay marriage, whether you like it or not. So, this is nothing new, and I'm not surprised, to be honest. And, you know, we're seeing a system where these judges, they're not bound by any facet of the so-called Constitution. They're only limited by their own imagination. Their own imagination. Yeah. Incredible. And really, you know, what is a judge? A judge is just a lawyer in a black robe. So we shouldn't expect much out of them. And they are gaining more and more power and sort of priming us for essentially what is a totalitarian system. But I think there was a lot of false hope that the Supreme Court was going to save us all. I don't know, man. And it seems like, to me, many of these lawsuits were weak. I think they were sabotaged internally. And I was just amazed at how many people put faith into Rudy Giuliani, even people who knew that this man had to have known about 9/11. He had to have known that it was fraudulent and a scripted event, a manufactured event. He had to have known. He had to have known. I mean, for God's sake, the man had his ass parked right up there in Building 7. In Building 7, he had to have known. But somehow people said, well, yeah, but this time he's on the Trump team and he's serious. And I just saw a lot of signs that Giuliani was sabotaging things from within. You know, that strange footage where he's sweating and his hair dye is running down his face, that looked really good. And then, of course, a week or so ago, he got COVID. He got COVID, supposedly. He's in the hospital, supposedly. Even though Trump said that he doesn't have a temperature, but he's in the hospital. What kind of a sickness is that where you don't even have a temperature, but you're in the hospital? That's pretty weird. So, yeah, I think for whatever reason, Trump has surrounded himself with enemies from the very beginning of his presidency, for whatever reason. So, yeah, we had, what, a group of 9 black-robed bandits that said, no, Groper Joe shall be the president. Yeah. So, you know, some of you might be thinking, oh, Scorpio, you're going awfully black pill on us today, man. Come on, man. Well, maybe so, but let's look at it from a different perspective here. I mean, maybe it's time for us to stop pulling around this cart, you know, this cart that, you know, is the belief that our federal government is going to help us. Maybe it's time to see that almost every institution associated with the government has now been infiltrated by the globalist criminals, the gangsters. So maybe it's time to stop hauling around this cart, you know, a cart that's full of turds. And it's time to stop thinking that, you know, this cart full of turds is something of value when it's not. Maybe it's time to give up some old illusions. Because really, the government is declaring war on the American population. Make no mistake, they have declared war on us all. In fact, on populations worldwide. So yeah, I think it's time to give up old illusions, as painful as that may be. You know, time to stop hauling around a cart full of manure and thinking we have something of value inside that cart, because we don't. And after all, you can't polish a turd. No, you can't polish a turd. No matter how much you rub it, you can't put a shine on it. And I was just reading a few days ago that Louis Farrakhan actually came out and said that this vaccine agenda amounts to a declaration of war on the people of America. A declaration of war. He is 100% correct. And obviously, you know, I don't agree with all of Farrakhan's philosophies, but that doesn't matter. The man is doing something right. I mean, he's well into his 80s. I gotta say, Farrakhan still looks good. He does. He looks sharp, man. And he's mentally sharp, too. He's no bumbling, foolish old man, that's for sure. And, you know, I remember back in the 80s, I used to talk to some of those Nation of Islam guys back when they used to, you know, they sell the bean pies and the and their newspaper. I don't remember what it was called, but it was a pretty hard-hitting newspaper. And it was a newspaper that was well aware of, let's say, the power of the chicken swingers. And of course, it was through that newspaper that Farrakhan revealed the ownership, the kosher ownership, of many of the slave ships. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, this vaccine agenda is a declaration of war. Let's not make any mistake about that. And so is the climate change agenda, because as I said earlier, it is the same agenda. It's all one big pie that they're going to serve up to the global population. And think about it, if they can force us to take a vaccine, in order to participate in society, oh, it's voluntary. It's voluntary. But if you don't take it, you can't work for the government. You can't work in healthcare. You can't go to concerts or even a ball game. And you can't enter public buildings. But it's not mandatory, guys. It's fully voluntary. Who are we kidding? If they can do that to us, how are we anything but slaves or cattle? We cannot allow this. It's time to get real. Because what do you do with cattle? You vaccinate your cattle, you tag them or brand them, and you put them into pens. Stay in your house. It's too dangerous. Don't go outside. So it's time to stop complying. It really is. We've got to find the courage. Open up your businesses and do not be intimidated, because they are bluffing us on multiple fronts. They do not have enough room in jails to stop it if enough people say no more, no more. They don't have enough room. They don't have enough cops to stop it if enough people say no. They really don't. And of course, if they bring in the National Guard or the Army and start shooting people in the streets, it's pretty obvious we don't have a democracy, right? So guys, they're bluffing us on multiple fronts. And it's time to man up and woman up, because this is a battle we cannot lose. And it's kind of funny, man. You know, last night I had this dream that I was doing the show and I couldn't think of anything to say. I was just sitting in front of the microphone with dead air. Couldn't think of anything to say. You know, and it's kind of funny because I almost wish that was true. Because everything that we are facing on a planetary level is because of government. We could have a reality where there isn't that much to talk about other than, hey, what are you going to do today? What do you got growing in the garden? You know, what's for dinner? That could be the reality. But instead, we have this worldwide government that is just stirring up problems left and right for us. But we're supposed to believe they're going to save us from it all, a problem that they concocted, created, and are now going to lead us to the solution, the final solution. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have the magic vaccine for the magic virus, right? It's the only way to save us. Your own immune system that God gave you, well, guess what? It's not good enough. You have to be injected with some kind of mysterious witch's brew to save you. Of course, nobody knows what's going to happen once you take that vaccine. Nobody knows. And here's the thing, man. Just as I suspected, they're already, you know, rolling out the experts saying that, well, yes, this vaccine is really going to help, but look, we're still going to have to wear our masks and socially distance and wash our hands 25 times a day, okay? They're already rolling out the experts telling us that, oh, we're going to have to keep masking for at least another year. Oh, yeah. They're already starting to tell us little by little. So we really are in a race to see how many people are going to see what is coming at them and have the perceptive ability to think this through, what's coming next. So many people think that things will go back to normal as soon as we have the vaccine. I can't wait to take that vaccine. Here, give me two. Yeah. And like they're telling us, This is moving along at warp speed. At warp speed. Yeah. Okay. And that said, I want to bring on my main man and co-host here at Operation Scorpio, Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. How is it going, man? How are you?
Let me turn on my mic. I guess I'm all right. I mean, it's just insanity, really. So let's get rid of this. How do we do that? Oh, there we go. There we go. And
so your camera conked out.
Well, I may be able to fix it. I'm gonna grab it right now. Yeah, man, it's insane. Well, as you and I mean, Jim Fetzer was he got a little irritated with me many moons ago when I pointed out that this whole Trump thing feels like pro wrestling. And he's like, oh, no, no. And but the problem is that this all is pro wrestling. Trump is so controlled by the Zionists and so in the pocket of the parasites that, you know, look at who he put in his cabinet. If you look at his actual track record, he's done nothing for the real people who elected him. He's totally served the billionaire class, the corporate interests, the international Jew, every which way. So it's sad that the MAGA types can't see how badly they're being played. And I mean, I guess in their defense, what else? They still believe that voting actually does something, that this government is legit. And there is no flipping legitimacy to this government. So.
Yeah. Giuseppe, you sound a little distant from your mic. I don't know what's going on, but you don't sound quite as strong as you usually do.
Well, because I'm trying to fix my camera.
Ah, you're twisting the knobs and turning the dials and hooking up cords. Okay.
Yeah. It's either now or it isn't. Let's
do, 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 do.
How did that get pushed so far back? That's weird. Okay, so here I am. Let's move that in. Sounds better.
Now you're in.
Oh yeah, here we go. Let's see if this actually worked. Ah, god damn it, it didn't. Oh well, we'll just have to use my let's
see. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. We'll just have to use my my avatar of what I think of these scumbag pieces of shit. Literally, it blows my mind that you've got a couple thousand Talmudic Satanists. You know, literally, they kidnap, torture, sacrifice children, and they can control the whole world to this extent where they don't even pretend that they have any concerns about the 7.3 billion Goyim cattle. And just like cattle, they've opted now to inject with an unproven technology. It's not a vaccine. The whole history of vaccines was all based on improperly implemented homeopathic medicine, where real homeopathy, it uses the energetics of a substance. So it can make something like arsenic healing, because they distill it down so low that there's no actual physical arsenic left. There's only energetic of arsenic. And so but the materialistic mouth breathing arrogant pseudoscience religion of the needle quaxination, they actually put real chunks of microbials in their vaccine, either dead or alive, which is not how you do it. Plus, with a ton of contaminated adjuvants. For example, everyone, well, you know, Jonas Salk cured polio. No, he didn't. Polio pretty much never existed. if you drop over a map of, again, another satanic cabal, a big chemical Dow and Monsanto and all that, in the 40s and 50s, you can look it up on the internet. There were all kinds of marketing Edward Bernays type mind rape. Oh, DDT will keep the bugs off me. And so they were fog spraying the deadly DDT everywhere. And if you take a map in the United States of polio outbreaks, and then you look at it, drop over that map, locations of intense DDT fog spraying, they exactly line up. Every major polio outbreak wasn't polio, it was DDT poisoning. And once they rolled back the DDT toxic poisoning of the masses, oh, all of a sudden polio rolled away. But in the meantime, Jonas Salk has figured out he's going to cure polio. Well, you know what Jonas Salk actually did? He didn't cure polio. That's complete and utter bullshit. What he did is he used sloppy techniques, including running his polio vaccine through a monkey kidney, and he turned out to have a virus in it that can give humans cancer. And so he did manage to give hundreds of millions of people over the last 40 years cancer. So that's the only science involving vaccination is forensic science. You look at what it's actually done, not these bullshit lies that, oh, we know so much about virology and immunization. No, you really don't, because the proof is always in the pudding. Only look at forensic science, right? So when I don't remember the name of the fellow who created penicillin, but that is provable. You know, penicillin will kill enough of a bacterial infection so that your immune system can heal you, right?
Right.
Penicillin doesn't cure you. No vaccination cures you. It's an antibiotic that beats back some of the infection. So if you take proper nutrition, get enough rest, get in the sun, you'll beat back that penicillin. And penicillin did a fine job, but like everything else with these corporate parasites, it's completely overused and has created all kinds of big problems now for the environment. I mean, you know, anyway, I could go on and on, but
yeah, exactly. And again, you know, this whole thing is leading us away from the notion that we have an immune system, a God-given immune system, that is an actual miracle, but we're being told, oh, it's no good. You won't survive without this magic injection of God only knows what's really in it. And, you know, we're seeing the agenda being hoisted upon us. You know, this has got to be the most extreme use of propaganda and we've ever seen in at least in the modern times.
Oh, it's so beyond propaganda, my brother. This is out and out mind raping gaslighting. This is Orwell through the looking glass. This is like you combine two seminal brilliant works of the 21st century, 1984 and Alice through the Looking Glass, and that's where we are now. That the great herds of Goyan cattle trust these satanic chicken swingers and what they're bringing to the table with these just despicable eugenics and transhuman altering injections. You can't call them vaccine. I don't think I finished my thought earlier, which is up until now, it has been a dead microbial or a attenuated live microbial with a bunch of toxic adjuvants and some other contaminants, and that's your vaccine. This is an unproven, untested technology that seeks to wrap a little piece of messenger RNA, mRNA, and it's in a fat, in a lipid, so it deceives the immune system and gets into cells. And then once in, this delicate piece of messenger RNA is instructed to cut a little piece of the human's genetic code, insert itself, and replicate. So
right.
It's so beyond, this is so evil, so truly satanic. It's insane.
Yeah, and this, you know, Tara Bullshitty is pointing out in the chat room, MRC5 is her newest ingredient. And apparently that's like some kind of a fetal tissue culture that they've been playing around with for like 50 years. And essentially we're going to have, you know, fetal cells injected into people's bodies. This is just beyond bizarre science fiction.
Oh yeah, it's just so despicably evil. And but oh man, you know, I don't know if you saw that 4-minute clip of Trump yesterday that, you know, thanks to my administration, we spent $14 billion, and even though and we've beaten this virus now and the we're going to return to normal cuz the people are getting vaccines, and going on and on with just, you know, mouth-breathing, drooling levels of lies that, I mean, what a clown. I mean, I said about a month ago on my show, The Perfect Triangle, in my intro, that Trump had the ability for the populist nationalist movement who elected him to be, go from Saul, the murderous, hedonistic, Jew, who transformed into Paul, the beloved apostle of Jesus, and do that for the nationalists. But it was clearly a pipe dream. He's just a puppet, and he's doing what he has to do to feather his nest now. So he's gonna leave, even though he doesn't want to leave, and he was elected. But and they'll reward him with the Trump network, and then if he's still alive in 4 years, he'll run again because Trump's really serves MAGA. And I'm like, I'm so sick of this shit.
If we even have a system resembling anything we know in 4 years, I think that's a pretty big assumption, man.
Right.
And you know, isn't this amazing too that President Trump is going to take a vaccine live on TV, probably saline solution. So is Obama, Clinton, George Bush. So, I mean, it just shows you that, you know, the puppet masters can cart out any one of these presidents and say, look, get on TV, pretend like you're taking the shot. And, I mean, isn't that incredible? They can get all the this agenda is so big. We got to get all the, you know, former presidents involved in, you know, convincing people this vaccine is safe.
Well, the deception is so big. Yeah, right. Exactly that. And it's so sad that the Goyim cattle are so intentionally dumbed down. When we were talking with the great real journalist yesterday on Perfect Triangle, Mark Anderson, what an awesome, great American he is. You know, he's a real journalist. There's a handful of them, John Rappaport, our friend of the show, Miriam Hanane, and there's others, you know, I can't name them all because the list is too short. But you know, Mark Anderson came right out and was saying that it's all BS. Sadly a mind rape. Oh, I know where I was going with that. Is he pointed out that the level of dumbing down the, American population, and to a lesser extent the European population, they still seem sharper than most Americans, sadly, is that, you know, you look at the Kansas eighth grade test. I thought it was to graduate high school, but Mark said it was to graduate eighth grade around the turn of the 20th century, early 20th century, that you could give it to a Harvard grad student. They couldn't pass it, right? And that was what you were expected to know then. And so, and now with the what's stunning to me is it really, really began like in the early 80s with the advent of cable television, right? And all these extra channels. And then with MTV was a real sad state because at first it was cool. You got to see these videos and things, but you know, it really stole people's ability to use their imagination because music is such a beautiful language of its own. And now you watch all these stupid, hedonistic or violent or narcissistic videos. It just robs us from all these beautiful songs that you should be listening to and imagining it yourself. And similarly, you know, they're taken away for so many of these mouth breathers. They don't even read books anymore. And so, you know, you're not using your imagination there. So I have this line for a song that I've never finished the song, but the gist of it is they dream for you, right? So all these elements where you should use your imagination in the past, now, you know, it's all injected into your brain for you. And it's just so criminal. And look at what we have as far as all these game playing, low impulse, violent, crazy Goyim cattle.
Yeah. That's a good point, man. I don't know. I think warp speed is an interesting choice of terms for this agenda. And I think they're signaling to us, hey, things are going to move ahead very quickly, especially now that Groper Joey the Groper Biden is going to be the president.
Yeah, man, that's exactly right. I mean, and then you know that the little satanic succubus Kamala Harris, the plan is to shuffle on old Groper Pedo out to Buffalo within a year, 18 months, and then have little succubus become president of the United States, even though she's not qualified. She's not a natural born citizen, but who cares? You had good old Barry Suerto president, and he wasn't born in the United States either. And they so crudely photoshopped Barry Suerto's birth certificate to they just mock you because they know the cattle are not going to do anything about it. There's only a small minority of people like us and the listeners and the viewers who are awake to this, but we don't clearly pose a threat to them in any way. So,
yeah. Well, and even if Barry Sotero was in fact born in the United States, which I seriously doubt, he was not a natural born citizen,
right?
Because his father was not a citizen, not even close. So, they're just all the rules that we've been told society operates by are simply not there. They're only for the little people. It's incredible that the disparity between reality of how things actually work and the way, you know, the hoi polloi are told the world works. The disparity is just incredible.
Yep, totally agree. Yeah, it's funny that really, we mentioned MTV, and right around then was when the Talmudic Satanist really came out of the shadows and flaunted their control, because they ran the movie Wall Street, which was Greed is Good, and Gordon Gekko and all that stuff. And ever since then, all the subhuman qualities of the Talmudic Satanists, the so-called seven deadly sins, are now championed in this culture and in Western culture. And that's because the Satanists control the globalist media. The Satanists are using it to reward you if you're a narcissist, hence the billion shitheads on all YouTube and Facebook that narcissistically have to show us every bit of their life, that they're special snowflakes. And it's like I said a few moments ago, it is Orwell through the looking glass, and it is disgusting.
Yes, it is. Well, in just a few minutes, we're going to be bringing on E. Michael Jones onto the show. And this is a conversation I'm very much looking forward to. I just wanted to ask you, Giuseppe, can I add him on to the call, or do you have to do that?
I'd have to add you on Skype, and then you could add him. And then once you've added him, you could drop off and back so why don't I do that right now?
Okay, yeah, because I don't want to confuse him.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Okay. He said he's ready to roll.
He's ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, yeah.
What the hell? What's going on here? All right.
And, you know, I've read quite a few of, you know, four or five of E. Michael Jones' books, and
oh yeah. In fact, during the break, I'm going to go grab my E. Michael Jones books because, all right, I'm going to mute you on StreamYard because we only need one mic. So okay. I wasn't sure if he was going to be on or not, but yeah, I'm a big fan of his. I mean, he's got courage. He's clearly a scholar, and he has something, and I want to ask him about this, but you know, he has actual morals, right? He lives his beliefs, and so few people in this Talmudic Satanist shithole of a world do that. Instead, they indulge every one of the seven deadly sins, especially narcissism and greed and everything, all the other ones. It's just, you know, yeah, man, yeah. It's a dark time. That scam yesterday, we knew it was coming, but somehow you always have like a secret hope in your heart of hearts that maybe finally these leaders will save our republic. But the reality is they won't. The only people who can save it is us and the patriots and the nationalists and the populists. That we are, yeah, the majority in this country, and yet we're allowing these parasites, these satanic parasites, to rule us. It can't be allowed to go on.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier about, you know, you can't polish a turd, and it's time to sort of give up some old beliefs, no matter how painful that might be, and, you know, think of some new solutions that are way outside the box. And, you know, in hour number three, we're going to bring on Steve from the UK, who is certainly somebody that is well versed in thinking way outside the box for solutions, right? Because we can't just sit back and just let it happen. You know what I mean?
Steve is a hero of mine. I like Steve a lot. I really admire everything he's doing to expose the banksters, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that is the root of the problem.
Yep.
The banksters and their alchemical magic that they use to create money from nothing and convince the entire world it's worth something and make people willing to do anything to get their hands on it when it's really nothing.
That's a great line by Dan Volfman in the YouTube chat. You must take the arsenic vaccine to please Santa Claus, Schwalber, Bill Gates, and Dr. Fraudshi, the science guy.
Well, that's funny. And I think that might be Voltman from one of the admins over there at grizzom.blogspot.com. I believe it's the same guy.
Oh, really?
He does some great posts over there. It's grizzom.blogspot.com. Good to see you there, man. And, you know, he mentioned Santa Claus, and, you know, I even saw a clip on the news where they carted out some guy in a Santa outfit to tell people, well, make sure to wear your mask. Ho, ho, ho. You know, I mean, it's just disgusting. Make sure to socially distance. Ho, ho, ho. You know, and so they're pulling out all the stops, man. Even Santa Claus is aboard the magic vaccine, magic virus train.
Oh, not Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah, man. They're pulling out all the stops. I've never seen anything like it, man.
Oh, this is unprecedented. I mean, this literally is unprecedented. I mean, if ever there was a reason to remove these satanic parasites from the global chessboard, it is what they've done in 2020. That is the crimes against humanity that are so egregious, so insane, so murderous that's they're already tried and convicted, and now it's time to mete out the justice.
There you go. Yeah, and stop playing by the rules that they've told us that we must play by.
Right.
Why they disregard every one of those rules. That's the other thing. You know, it's sad. You know, there's this clip that's kind of gone around the internet of this woman in L.A. Maybe you saw it. A restaurant owner, a woman that's put her entire life into making that restaurant work. And, of course, you know, the great mayor, Gil Garcetti, the globalist operative, forced her to close her restaurant to play by the rules. But meanwhile, they allowed a catering company to set up literally 50 yards away where they're filming a movie.
I didn't know that. That's hilarious.
Yeah, and the sad part was, she goes, "We want our rights back." But the thing is, if you have to ask for your rights, you're not getting them back. And that's what we all need to see.
Well, you know, it's interesting about Garcetti is he pretended he was he's got an Italian last name, right? But and then his grandfather moved to Mexico and was hung during the Mexican Revolution. But the reality is he's Jewish. His mother was Jewish, right?
And I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's converted to Judaism, and his rabbi. And this is hats off to Tim Kelly and Joe Atwill at Powers and Principalities. I love that podcast. Tim Kelly, I support him on Patreon. I keep bugging him, "Hey, come on our show," but he hasn't replied yet. But if you want to listen to a great podcast, Tim Kelly, Powers and Principalities on Podomatic, and
yeah,
that Garcetti is now studying the Talmud with this female rabbi who has publicly come out and stated that, you know, Christianity is a malignancy in this country and that white privilege is the cancer, and all the inversions that these Talmudic malignancy, the real malignancy, have. But that's just how Satanists always operate. Like BB9 just said, that's in the chat room. Blackbird 9, the great Frederick C. Blackburn. That's the foundation of a Sabbatean, Frankist, Illuminati, Zionist, communist system. Turn everything to its opposite. Normalize the abnormal. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great comment. Okay, guys, stay tuned for our interview with E. Michael Jones. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. I'm here with my co-host, Giuseppe, from the District of Criminals, and Brutal Honesty, Chris Weiner. And it is our great honor this hour to be joined by Dr. E. Michael Jones, a man who is a top shelf researcher and a true voice of reason and morality. Dr. Jones, welcome to the show and thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, just so you know, both myself and Giuseppe are fans of your work. On video, I actually have a copy of your book behind me, Barren Metal, which, you know, is such an incredible history going back for many, many centuries. And you really pull out some incredible revelations about how the system has worked and how it works and who is controlling the levers of power. Dr. Jones, how did you sort of get onto this, you know, concept of Jewish power? It really is one of the most verboten subjects there is to talk about. How was that revealed to you in the beginning?
Well, as you're right. I didn't start off by wanting to talk about this. I had all of the prejudices and I internalized all of the taboos that the average person has in this culture. But I started doing research, and I started doing research into the sexual revolution, and that led to a book called Libido Dominandi, Sexual Liberation and Political Control, while at the same time I was editing Culture Wars magazine. And it turns out one of the people who subscribed to the magazine was a man by the name of Rabbi Sam Dresner, became one of my biggest fans. Whenever he met a Catholic, he'd tell the Catholic to subscribe to Culture Wars. So, you know, we had that. I reviewed his book. You know, we had this kind of relationship. And then one in the middle of, you know, something or other, a discussion we're having, he said to me, "Why do you always talk about Jews?" I said, "Well, wait a minute. I didn't know I was talking about Jews." And he said, "Well, look at Dionysus Rising, for example. You talk about Arnold Schoenberg there. He's the villain of that book." And then look at they went down the list, and I started, look at Wilhelm Reich. You accused him of the sexual revolution and libido dominandi, and look at blah, blah, blah. And I suddenly realized, I think you're right. I think I have been talking about Jews, but I've never really put that together. And the moment when I started to put it together, was, this was the time of our conversation. He's since passed on, but the early 21st century, the era of George Bush, when suddenly I realized that a group of people that were Jewish revolutionaries had taken over our foreign policy. They were called neoconservatives, and that's supposed to confuse us all. But the main neoconservative that was, who was the father of neoconservatism, was a man by the name of Irving Kristol. And it turned out that a few years before that, he was a Trotskyite. So what's the common denominator between Trotskyites and neoconservatives? Well, it's Jews. This was a Jewish revolutionary movement that developed over a period of time, and it doesn't confine itself to the normal political boundaries. So it went from being radical Marxist to ultra-conservative, but maintained this kind of Jewish revolutionary spirit in the meantime. That's what got me started. And over, so the book came out 12 years ago. We are now completely sold out of the first edition, and we're bringing out a second edition, an expanded second edition in three volumes, 600 new pages of material that basically leads me to believe that I was right when I came up with this idea 12 years ago, 15 years ago. And beyond that, it's not just my idea. It's a category of reality. The Jewish revolutionary spirit is part of human history. And it's such a big part that I'm saying you can't understand it, human history, unless you understand the Jewish revolutionary spirit, which is basically the battle between Logos and anti-Logos. That's what human history is about. So well, just to bring
no, I'm
it,
sorry.
Go ahead.
That's so true. That's so true. And, you know, your introduction to the Jewish revolutionary spirit always stuck with me. Your experience in college about, you know, who was leading the protest march of the communists and so on. I always found that to be very revealing. And, you know, the other term you've used on a regular basis is the gay disco. And that's what the kind of society they're creating for us. And what I see that, you know, they use that sort of gay disco to hide the totalitarian nature of the system they're trying to create. Hey, you know, you can have all the gay sex you want. That shows you're free, right?
Yes, but don't ask for a raise. That's different. Wait a minute. No. Go to the gay disco. Don't ask for a raise. By the way, I just spoke with two friends from the ultimate gay disco, the world's ultimate gay disco, otherwise known as Berlin, the capital of Germany now. And there is an epidemic sweeping through Berlin. Guess what this epidemic is? I'll give you, I'll help you along. It's not COVID. What's the epidemic that is now sweeping through Berlin? I'll give you another hint. It swept through Berlin in the 1930s as well.
Oh, nationalism.
No, syphilis.
Oh.
Syphilis created nationalism, by the way. And I discuss that in the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and in Libido Dominandi, the book on sexual liberation and political control. So back in the 1930s, it was Magnus Hirschfeld and his Institute for Sexualwissenschaft. It was basically a homosexual bordello for people like Christopher Isherwood and other English homosexuals. One of the main vectors of syphilis back then. And guess what? Nothing has changed. Magnus Hirschfeld is dead and gone. But the main vector of syphilis in Berlin is gay bathhouses. And apparently, no, they're Berlin, the Angela Merkel and her government are going to shut down the right of Germans to protest against the COVID regulations. But there are no regulations on gay bathhouses in Berlin. Oh, well, guess what? This is not a coincidence. It turns out that the same thing is true of San Francisco. In San Francisco, if you're a Catholic, you can have one person in church at a time. One person. If you're a homosexual, you can go to any gay bathhouse and do whatever you want, and there are no restrictions whatsoever. So this
well,
is.
Well, gosh, we don't want to discriminate against anyone. Come on, man.
Unless they're unless they're Catholics or people who want to go to worship God, and then feel free to discriminate. The governor of Virginia just told us. I didn't know. Who knew that the governor of Virginia was a theologian? He just told us, you don't have to go to church to pray to God, or God doesn't have to. God can hear you even if you're not in church. Thank you. Thank you, Governor Northam. Where did you get your degree in theology?
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Giuseppe, maybe you can jump in and have a question for Dr. Jones.
Yes, Dr. Jones, honored to be speaking with you, sir. I'm a huge fan of your work. I especially enjoy your interviews with Tim Kelly and when you sit in with Kevin Barrett on the news show every Friday. And my question is, I was born and raised a Catholic, and I remember I'm old enough that when I was a little boy in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, working class, used to go to church every day of the week, even starting in Catholic kindergarten. And that was, what, 1964, 65. And the mass was in Latin, and it was so awe-inspiring and just so moving. And then all of a sudden, Vatican II hit, and all of a sudden go to some, you know, the priest talking in English and some chubby nun playing a folk guitar. And it just lost all its magisterial, you know, like bigger than life influence on my mind. And that to me was the beginning of a slippery slope for the Catholic religion. And now we've got the, I don't even know how this guy, Jorge Mario Bergoglio, who is a mass murderer out of Argentina, how this guy becomes the Pope. And he is so obviously a traitor to the Catholic religion and a globalist, wearing a mask and trying to get the world to become the Weimar Republic of Germany. And what the heck is going on at the leadership levels of the Catholic Church?
Yes. Where should I begin here? Vatican II. Okay. Vatican. I understand what you're saying. I remember early on, I've been doing Culture Wars magazine and Fidelity for almost 40 years now. December, a year from now, will be 40 years. Oh. Early on, a man from New Jersey, nice man, took me aside and said, nothing's going to change until we get back to the Latin Mass. And I looked at him and I thought, I don't get it. I just don't see it. And if I had gotten it then, I never would have done all the research that I've done in the meantime, including let's say a book like Slaughter of Cities, Urban Renewal as Ethnic Cleansing. You were targeted. You didn't know it. But you, if you were an Italian Catholic in Milwaukee or any other big city in the north and the east of the United States, you were targeted. You were a guinea pig in a social experiment. It was called social engineering. It had two phases, basically. One was to destroy your neighborhood, like the north end of Boston, to give one example of an Italian neighborhood, where they actually wrote about the destruction of it. The Harvard professors wrote about what they were doing there. And the other part of it was the sexual revolution. Okay, that you put those two things together, and your world is not going to survive, and your world did not survive. Now, right. The fact that it happened after Vatican II has led a lot of people to blame Vatican II. And one of them is Archbishop Vigano, who has said this recently. I beg to differ. I beg to differ. I've done research into Vatican II. We have two significant books in this regard. The one is Dave Wemhoff's book about John Courtney Murray, Time, Life, and the CIA, in which he explains pretty clearly that John Courtney Murray was working with Time Life, which was the propaganda ministry for the CIA at that point in time. A man by the name of C.D. Jackson was both in the CIA and Luce's right-hand man. And the purpose of that, they saw an opportunity with the Second Vatican Council, and they got Murray involved in trying to have the church approve the separation of church and state as official church policy. He failed. He failed, but people to this day say that he succeeded because a certain group of people control the media. Second thing I'm talking about is it's in the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, the story of Malachi Martin, a Jesuit right-hand man to Cardinal Bea, who became a double agent working for the Jews, in particular the American Jewish Committee and B'nai B'rith, who paid him for the rest of his life with large lucrative book contracts from the New York publishing industry. His job was to get the church to say that the Jews did not kill Jesus Christ. Okay? He failed. Now, he failed. When I say he failed, that statement did not make it into Nostra Aetate, which is an official document of Vatican II. But the Jews, in this regard, are not going to take no for an answer, and they take over the interpretation of the council. And basically that means that whatever the Jew says, that's what the council means. And they say that the council, the church repudiated anti-Semitism, blah, 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 blah. A rabbi just wrote another article. There's probably a computer program that churns these articles out, but the Catholic Church apologized for 2000 years of anti-Semitism, blah, blah, blah. Not true. It's not true. So all I'm saying is if you look into the real Vatican II, it was subjected to heavy duty psychological warfare, both by the CIA and by organized Jewry. In both instances, they failed. By failure, I mean that the 2000 bishops who represented the Catholic Church at that time rejected any change in the teaching of the Catholic Church. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't problems with the document. The main problem with Nostra Aetate doesn't say that the Jews didn't kill Christ. It says not all Jews at the time of Christ called for his death. Well, that means some Jews did call for his death, you know, and we know who they were. We know who they weren't. It wasn't the Blessed Mother. She didn't cry, crucify him. This is just St. John did not cry, crucify him. They stood at the foot of the cross and they stood by Christ when everyone abandoned him. The Jewish people killed Christ. That doesn't mean every Jew in Jerusalem wanted him to die. The Jewish people is an entity that is mobilized by Jewish leaders for Jewish political power. Okay, you can't have Jewish leaders without Jewish followers. That's what you had at the time of Christ. It was called the Sanhedrin, and they called for Barabbas. And when they called for Barabbas, they became revolutionaries. So I'm saying, to get back to your story, it's a miracle that anybody goes to church after the assault that has been waged against the Catholic Church. Okay, the main antidote here against this is not abandoning the church. It's understanding what happened to the church and spreading the word about what happened, because Jesus Christ knew this. And it's in the gospel. And the story I'm talking about is the parable of the boat. Christ is asleep in the boat. That boat is the church. All of the church fathers said that the church is like a boat on stormy seas. It's always being tossed about by the enemies, by the devil and the people who follow the devil in this world. And we, in this situation of trouble, we always feel that Christ is asleep. It always seems as if nobody's in control. Where is Jesus? Well, he's asleep. And so in the end, we go, we wake him, grab him, and wake him up and say, don't you care that we're all going to die? And at this point, he gets up and he puts his hand and he calms the waves and he turns to him and says, where was your faith? Because at times like this, you have to have faith. There's no way around it. There are times of trouble. There are times of turmoil. And it is lots of times you can look back after it's over and you can see, yeah, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. But it seemed bad at the time. But you usually don't feel this way when it's happening, because that's when the storm is tossing the boat about. And that's when you think you're going to die. So that's, I mean, as far as I can tell, that's the whole big picture here of what happened to you and your Italian neighborhood in Milwaukee.
You know, it's fascinating and brilliant what you've mentioned. And as a quick follow-up, the first 10 years of my life were literally like the movie The Godfather. And then my Sicilian Nanu, my grandfather, died tragically of a massive heart attack. And that was right around the time when the social experiment was going on, and it broke up the what was known as the Third Ward in Milwaukee, much like the North End in Boston. And everybody wanted to be an American.
Yes.
And they spread out, and that was that. But what's interesting is, one final thing, as you mentioned, how does the Catholic Church survive? Remarkably, it survives because it is a community worship. You know, both in Milwaukee, where my whole family lives, and I live right now in Northern Virginia, Bolshevik Northern Virginia, 11 miles outside of the District of Criminals. But even the Catholic Church is here. People go there to share the communal love of the message of Jesus the Christ, and they don't, you know, it's like they've detached from all the sick globalism of the Catholic machine, and the church at the local level is going very strong and getting stronger, in my opinion.
I've been to many parishes in Northern Virginia, and they all were big, thriving, strong parishes. Multi-ethnic, but right. That's the type of thing. By the way, talking about Milwaukee, do you remember Father Grappi?
Oh, yes, I've met him several times.
That man had a vowel on the end of his name, and I suspect he was an Italian.
right.
Now, what was an Italian doing leading the black destruction of Italian neighborhoods? What was he doing? What was he thinking?
Yeah, that is insane. I remember back in the day, there used to be counter protests to him, and it would always go, E-I-E-I-E-I-O, Father Grappi's got to go. I remember attending some of those rallies. My father was very anti-Grappi. In fact, we knew the family for decades owned Grappi's Market. And it was a small Italian grocery store, and my family business, until we were put out of business by the giant corporations, was making bleach. So we delivered bleach to Grappi's Market. And so we knew the family well. His own parents couldn't believe what he was doing.
No, there something happened around that period of time. I did a story. I wrote the biography of Cardinal Kroll. And one of the people I interviewed was a man by the name of Tony Massimini, another guy with a vowel at the end of his name. And this guy was a priest, and he got, I don't know what happened to him, but he told me in the interview that the church is still trying to catch up with Sigmund Freud. He sincerely believed that. If there were ever a witch doctor, imposter, mumbo jumbo master, and Jewish culture warrior, it was Sigmund Freud.
Him and his nephew, Eddie Bernays.
Yes.
Let's give Chris Weinert a chance to jump in with a question. Chris, go ahead with a question for Dr. Jones, please.
I'm sorry, I can't hear the question.
Oh, he can't. Hold on, Chris. He can't hear you. Let me reshare. Try now, Chris.
All right. Can you hear me now?
I can, yes.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. All right. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm a big fan of your work. I appreciate everything you're doing. I guess to sum it up, I had a long question, but I'll make it short. Have you researched at all the Jewish infiltration into the Vatican throughout time, possibly with, say, people like Aaron of Lincoln and imposing, like, say, William the Conqueror's Doomsday Book and agrarian feudalism under the guise of the Vatican into the English continent or the landmass of England, we'll just say, or off the European continent into there and even into the New World? Maybe the division between the Freemasons, the Jesuits, and a lot of the power sources that have infiltrated the Anglican Church as well. How do you think this all ties together, and where do you think they're going with this? Because all these robber baron oligarch proxies seem to all support Israel, and they all seem to proclaim this lineage or even proclaim Christianity or offshoots of it, but seem to uphold this oath that's higher to Israel. Can you explain this phenomenon in your terms of research and maybe shed some light on this?
Okay, first of all, I don't get into Jewish influence in places like England until the rise of Manasseh ben Israel, which came about as the result of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. Manasseh ben Israel ended up in Amsterdam, where he became an agent for the Jews who wanted to be let back into England. Now, at the time of the expulsion, the Vatican was notorious for being, receptive to Jewish interest. If there were whenever there would be problems in a country, the Jews would complain at the Vatican, and the Vatican would pretty much invariably take the side of the Jews and defend their rights against local bishops who had to put up with the actual problems. The Achilles heel in this regard, and I'm talking about people who were princes as well, princes in the church and temporal princes as well, was usury, which was basically led to Jewish privilege. The sovereign would let the Jew into his country because the Jew would lend him money at a low interest rate, maybe 6%. But the condition of going there would be that he was allowed to lend money to the average person at the normal rate of 44%. So that meant at least 44%. That was normal. So it could be higher than that. So the result was that the people immediately fell under the heel of the Jews, of the Jewish usurers, and they started complaining to the prince, but the prince didn't want to give up his access to easy money, and so he kept the Jews on. And the man who stepped in tried to adjudicate this in the 15th century was St. John Capistran, Capistrano, who preached against the Jews and also preached crusades. But talked about Jewish privilege. It's not a new concept. I wrote a book called Jewish Privilege about the contemporary meaning of the word, and that got me banned from Amazon Kindle after that book became a bestseller. So it's not a new idea. It is there, and the princes have always been tempted in this regard.
Okay, Dr. Jones, we're at the bottom of the hour already. So everyone, please stay tuned. We'll be back with the second half of our interview with Dr. E. Michael Jones. Stay tuned. Okay, welcome back to Operation Scorpio and our second half of our interview with Dr. E. Michael Jones. Before the bottom of the hour, Dr. Jones, you were talking about England and sort of the Jewish reentry into England. Do you want to finish up your thoughts with that, sir?
Yeah, I didn't get to talk about the Jesuits. Okay, now I dealt with the Jesuits in both Baron Metal and in Jewish revolutionary spirit. The crucial turning point came in the 18th century when we had the rise of Freemasonry. The Whigs, Whig Party in England, after creating the bank, weaponized the Masonic lodges, took them over, and made them vehicles for revolution in France, vehicles for subversive literature. At the same time this was going on, the Duke de Choiseul, a French minister, went to Pope Benedict the 14th and told him, you need to suppress the Jesuits. The Marquis de Pombal was doing the same thing in Portugal. The Pope, Pope Benedict the 14th, was a strong pope, and he simply he said to the Marquis, Duke de Choiseul, got up from the chair, the Holy See, and said, do you want to sit here? You can become Pope. You become Pope. So he embarrassed the guy, and he resisted that. His successor was a weak man, and that weak man suppressed the Jesuits. This is a tragedy, because there was no – I don't think there's any exaggeration to say that the Jesuits were one of the greatest religious orders in the history of the Catholic Church. Their accomplishments were nothing short of heroic. During this period of time, which is to say the post-Reformation, the immediate years following the Reformation, where half of Europe disappears into the rat hole known as the Reformation, the Protestantism. But the whole new world opens up. The new world is opening up, and the Jesuits are showing up in places like Paraguay. Take a look at the movie The Mission for a graphic presentation of this, where they walk off into the jungle where no European had ever been before and learn Guarani. And not only learn how to speak Guarani, they'd write the Guarani dictionary and the Guarani grammar and preserve that language to this day. Matteo Ricci did the same thing in China. Can you imagine being the first European to learn Chinese? Think about it. Not only that, he wrote one of the classics of Chinese literature. He was so good at that. Now, this is unprecedented. This is the time when the Presbyterians show up in Nova Scotia after the British won the war with the French, and they won't even speak. They announce to the people there that you're going to become Presbyterians, and the people there who speak. They are French and Indian. They're a complete mixture. They speak French. They speak Mi'kmaq because the Jesuits learned how to speak Mi'kmaq. The English won't speak anything but English. And so as a result, they say, no, thanks. We're already Christians. We became Catholics 200 years ago. That was because of the Jesuits. Now, this is an extraordinary sense of accomplishment that these people, extraordinary achievements leading up to the present, where they are the main fifth column promoting homosexual behavior and Judaizing within the Catholic Church. Now, that's a tragic fall. There's no other word about it. And again, you have to go back to the period around Vatican II to find out what happened. The man who knew Malachy Martin well was Bob Kaiser, Robert Blair Kaiser, who was a Jesuit seminarian and left because the Jesuits had been infected with the teaching of Teilhard de Chardin, the evolutionary teaching. And so he thought, I could be a better Jesuit if I leave the order. And he was probably right. That's the tragedy of that order. And all of the stuff you hear about before that time, about the Jesuits controlling this, the Jesuits controlling that, it's complete preposterous fairy tale. Which we now call the Black Legend, made up by Protestants to discredit one of the most effective organizations ever in the Catholic Church.
Wow, that's fascinating. This time is really flying by. I want to make sure we take a little time and kind of skip forward to the present day. And I want to get your take on, you know, this whole COVID agenda and now the vaccine agenda. Where do you think this is taking our culture and society, these two massive events, COVID-19 and the vaccine?
Yeah, well, first of all, we have to take back a few years, beginning in 2016. What we have back then, 1 year before that, with the passage of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in the state of Indiana, was basically a state of war between the oligarchs and representative government. That's what it's come down to today, okay? Today, okay? Because we have a situation now where the media have become so powerful that they override representative government whenever they want to. The most recent example of this was the New York Times declaring, we choose the president. We are the ones who announce who is the president. Not the legislature, not the electoral college, none of these people. We are the ones who do that. And what you're seeing now is the implementation of that agenda, which is basically the truth is the opinion of the powerful. That is the world we live in today. The opinion of the powerful, and by the powerful, I mean the oligarchs, but in particular, big tech, who instruments of the oligarchs that have unprecedented control over the flow of information. Never before in the history have we had this. And so they can basically simply out what we saw 4 years ago when Trump became president was the mainstream media checked out of doing journalism. They have been doing propaganda ever since. And any type of information that goes against their agenda will be banned. And part of what happened over the past year is that the COVID virus has taken on the manifestation of a form of cultural warfare against the majority of the people of this earth. This is a worldwide thing now. This may be very, very well may be the first completely global event in human history, where people all over the world are being subjected to the same forms of control. So what am I saying here? There's no such thing as COVID. I'm not saying that. Okay. What I'm saying is that it looks to me like a seasonal flu. It may be a weapon. It may have been weaponized, but it can't be anything other than what it is. If it's a virus, it's not a bacteria. If it's not a bacterium, it's not a bullet. it's not a sword. In other words, it has to act in a certain way. And what we're seeing here is that whatever it is being weaponized for political purposes. First political
purpose. Yes, and I've been calling COVID the magic virus for some time because it seems to be able to morph and change into any way that the globalists want, and it seems to fulfill everything on their wish list. It's really quite incredible.
Right, and their wish list is control. So let's talk about the thing looming just over the horizon, the COVID passport. The vaccination passport. You have to be vaccinated and you have to have a certificate that you've been vaccinated if you want to get on an airplane. Or maybe if you want to go to the supermarket and buy food or whatever. An unprecedented intrusion into the freedoms that people have enjoyed up till this point. I was supposed to go to France in September to give a speech there, but I wasn't allowed on an airplane for the first time in my life. And this is after traveling many times to Iran, places where the certain people felt I shouldn't go. So let's just try and back this down in terms of what we know about disease and about science. What is a vaccine? A vaccine is a small dose of the disease that you want to prevent. You have a small dose of smallpox injected into you so that your body can create antibodies so that next time when the big dose comes along, your body already has that the memory of that, and the antibodies will go in and take care of it, and you will not get sick. Now, that means if there's a vaccine, that means that anyone who has contracted COVID should be immune. Unless they're dead, unless they died, okay? In which case, you don't need a passport and you don't need to go to the supermarket either. But the point here is, if they're going to tell us that we need proof of vaccination, then proof of positivity should be the same way. It should serve the same purpose because they both are evidence of immunity. If positivity is not evidence of immunity, then the vaccine is not evidence of immunity because the vaccine is nothing more than a way of giving you a small dose of something to build up resistance to it. It seems to me that's the confrontation that's going to have to take place when they start pressuring us, number one, to get vaccinated, and number two, to show proof of vaccination to get on airplanes.
Yes, and you know the other thing that I'm finding very strange about this is, you know, somehow China has already conquered the virus, and they're at full production, even though people are still wearing masks. They're slowly telling us that we're going to have to keep wearing masks even after we have the vaccine. But what I'm seeing on a macro scale is, or macro level, is that they seem to be passing the torch of power over to China, so that the Chinese system can be implemented as the global system. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that there is a group of people among the oligarchs who like what they see in China. And I think that they would like to implement that because they have a docile population in China and we don't have it over here, in spite of all of the social engineering that's been imposed. So if you get to the elite members of the upper levels of big manufacturing corporations like the automobile companies, they want a China. They want the United States of China over here. They would like to abolish whatever gains the worker has come to through unionization, which means high-paying jobs in the industrial sector, like the automobile industry. And they want to impose forms of control that the docile Chinese have already accepted. So I think it's like a marriage made in heaven. Yeah. Or someplace else, maybe not in heaven.
Yeah, there you go. I want to make sure that both Giuseppe and Chris get a chance to ask another question. So, Giuseppe, take it away.
Well, I'd like to follow up on the idea of this. It's not even a vaccination now, this new technology, which they skipped the animal trials, which would, you know, you wrap a fat around a small piece of messenger RNA, inject it into the body, the fat deceives the cell so that you can get the little snippet of messenger RNA into the cell where it goes and cuts off an existing piece of the genetic code inserts itself and tries to rewrite it. This is not a vaccination. This is a transhuman experiment. And you're absolutely dead on as far as pointing out this is the first time in the history of a recorded man that something on a global scale, which is really, in my mind, a true satanic agenda to do two things. The Satanists believe that they'll kill off the people who can't accept this transhuman injection, and who can survive it will then become more open to the nanotechnology that is going to be also included in these vaccines. And my personal belief is that this first vaccine is going to be very attenuated, very weak, so it doesn't actually kill the millions or possibly a billion or two that they're after from the eugenic side of things. But they want to get people used to taking 2-3 of these vaccines a year because the other side is the whole COVID thing.
Right.
COVID is nothing more than the coronavirus, which is the common cold, which is ubiquitous in nature. It's in every human. It's in every mammal. It's in every reptile. It's in the dirt, for God's sake. This is just such an insane play to serve the Dark Lord. And even Bill Gates' patents, part of the chimeric technology is called luciferase, that'll make you glow like a jellyfish to prove under certain types of light from a smartphone that you've had the vaccine. And then his another one of his patents is 060606. They're not even hiding this stuff anymore. Your thoughts on that?
Well, why is this called Operation Warp Speed? Well, yeah. Because they're rushing this vaccine through without any of the normal safeguards that have to be put in place in order to make sure that the cure is not worse than the disease. All of those things have been bypassed, and the companies who are bringing it out want to be indemnified to say they have no legal responsibility for anyone who drops dead as a result of taking their vaccine. Now, that should cause us to be suspicious.
Yes.
That alone should cause us to be suspicious. But secondly, there is the track record of people like Bill Gates in places like India and Africa, where people have been used as human guinea pigs. I mean, literally as human guinea pigs. We were all guinea pigs in a social experiment, but these people are literally human guinea pigs. And so what happened in Kenya is that the bishops found that the Gates vaccines were acting as a sterilizing agent on the women who took them. Many, they had to have more than one vaccination, and it turns out that they were sterilized as a result of that. Okay, that led the bishops of Kenya to say, "Don't take it. Don't get vaccinated." Why are we ignoring things like this when the evidence is there? Robert Kennedy has brought up lots of evidence, both India and Africa, about what has happened here. The other thing, again, from Africa, I just had a friend wrote from Nairobi. I spoke in his class to a group of students there. He says that Tanzanians don't have COVID. Well, why don't Tanzanians have COVID? Well, the answer is because they don't speak English. If you go to Kenya, everyone speaks English. That was a colony. Tanzania was a protectorate. And if you go to Tanzania, you better speak Swahili because you're not going to get along. I've had this experience personally. So the fact that they speak Swahili means that they're immune to COVID because they can't hear reports about it in English, which is one of the main things that makes you susceptible to it. Listening to the report makes you wonder whether I got it. If I hadn't heard about the report, I think I had a cold. And I just got over the cold. Once you hear the report, your cold becomes COVID. And so the man in charge of Kenya, President Magufuli, used the test to tested first a goat. The goat tested positive, and then a mango tested positive after that. And at that point, they decided we're not going to be part of the COVID agenda. And so as a result, the Tanzanians don't have COVID. It may be the only country in the world that is like this.
Amazing, amazing. Chris, why don't you jump in with the final question for Dr. Jones?
Yeah, I would just like to point out that there seems to have been a lockstep degree of executive and congressional laws or orders or even economic positions that have been put in place to usher in this situation that we're seeing right now. And it's almost like it always favors the cabal or the powers that be. This technocracy as well, it has really eliminated the value of human labor in terms of military power for the first time in human history. And it's really... man, it's adjusted the paradox of supply and demand in terms of human labor and humanity in terms of long-term plans. So I think that this is a mass depopulation agenda that they're trying to put on here, guised as something as a complete inversion as they typically do. What are your thoughts on this? Does this line up to the research that you have done? And where do you see this going? Like basically the mainstream media will invert everything that's said and say that, you know, despite the body count that you've just talked about with, you know, following Bill Gates and these other billionaires, these vaccines, eugenic programs and things like this, they'll say it's baseless claims, and arguably, you know, it doesn't matter how much evidence you can put in front of their face. These guys are funded, their bread and butter is 65% of their revenue comes from these guys. So the mainstream media is not going to really turn any sort of scrutiny towards this. What do we do? How do we really pass the message? And where do you think we go from here?
Issue here, as I see it, is going to be vaccination, mandatory vaccination. That has to be resisted. You can't allow people to play with your health. You simply can, you only have one body. It's not a car that you can trade in and get a new one. This is you. You are your body. And so you have to protect your bodily integrity by refusing to become a guinea pig. In this regard, that's the main thing. That's the main thing facing us just over the horizon. Once we get through with all the election stuff, it is their form of trying to control us. Their forms of control have failed in the past, and so I think we should take hope out of that. I was in, as I told you, I was in Nairobi, and not only was I the last time was 2 years ago, but before that it was 18 years ago. And I was there and I talked about African AIDS. So not only did I get to speak in Nairobi again, I got to speak at Catholic University of Eastern Africa again. And I was actually in the same room where I spoke 18 years ago. And I mentioned that to the people there. And I said, how many people woke up this morning worried that they were going to die of AIDS? Well, I know you're going to be shocked to hear this, but not one single person raised his hand. No one even remembers that. Well, that was the prelude to what we're going through now. It was benign in many ways, okay, compared to, but it was a form of control. It was certainly a form of population control. I said that then. I shocked a lot of people in Africa when I said that. Who is this Mzungu coming to tell us that we're not dying? I said, I'm not saying you're not dying. You're just not dying of this disease. It was made up. And at the time, a week before I had been in Africa, in Nairobi at that time, Kool and the gang had showed up at Uhuru Park and they held a conference. And the way to get into the conference, you had to show them a condom, because the point of African AIDS was to get Africans to use condoms. No group in the world probably hates condoms more than Africans. And it didn't work. Okay. And the point here is that this same people were involved. Mr. Fauci was involved in that campaign. Mr. Fauci was probably killed more homosexuals than Hitler and Stalin combined, because he was implemented the fast tracking of AZT, which was one of the most toxic substances on the face of the earth. It was supposed to be a form of chemotherapy. The homosexuals took it and it killed them. It killed them. And he's responsible for their deaths. Because he promoted it as a cure. I think we have to keep all of this history in mind now that we're confronted with something far bigger, far worse in terms of its intrusive nature and far more dangerous to everyone.
Well, that's so true. And, you know, isn't it interesting that, you know, Dr. Fauci certainly was at the heart of all of this. And here, another similarity is, you know, a lot of people during the AIDS crisis, they tested positive for AIDS. And even though they were asymptomatic, they were told to take AZT, and just like what's happening now, you're fine, but you're positive.
That's a tragedy. Look, what's the difference between Arthur Ashe and Magic Johnson? Arthur Ashe tested positive, and he took the AZT, and it killed him. Magic Johnson tested positive. He took the AZT. It made him feel sick. He said, I'm not taking this anymore, and he's alive today. That's the difference. So beware of medicine.
Yeah, amen. And beware of Dr. Fauci as well.
Yes.
Dr. Jones, I really want to thank you for coming on, and this has been a great conversation, and I hope that in the future sometime you'd be willing to come on again.
Yes, I'd be happy to. Thank you for having me.
Excellent, excellent. So maybe you could just give us your final thoughts for today and, you know, where you think we might be heading in these next few months.
Yes, as I go to culturewars.com. Okay, where you can find the material that has been banned elsewhere. But part of what we have to go through is, I've already talked about it. I did a short video of me taking a walk, and this black woman comes up to me, and she says she's going to kill herself because nobody loved her. And she hopped over the railing, and I spent the next 15 minutes trying to talk her back. And what did I say? What could I say? I said, God has a plan for your life. Now, she didn't jump in the river. It's hard to tell what she was thinking. She was very upset, but I have a feeling that I was part of God's plan at that point, because there's no way I could have planned to meet that woman.
Right.
So wow. this is even in moments like this where you feel at the end of your rope, don't jump in the river. It's that simple. Or to give the Catholic analogy of this, don't jump out of the boat, because as soon as you jump out of the boat, it's instant death. And we don't need that.
Yeah. And here we have what, you know, this spiritual perspective is so important right now, because this is not a war we can win without a spiritual stronghold.
That's important, too. I mean, I try to say this to the white guys who tell me they're going to worship Thor and that's going to solve all their problems. That's not going to work. We have our backs to the wall now, and we need spiritual help. And if you think you can overcome the magnitude of this sort of evil, you're fooling yourself. You need God's help, both personally and collectively, to overcome this evil.
Okay. Well, Dr. Jones, thanks again for coming on. We sure appreciate it, and we hope to talk to you again in the near future. Take care, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, so welcome back to hour number 3 of Operation Scorpio. And last hour we had a very interesting conversation with E. Michael Jones. And this hour we're going to bring on Steve from the UK, a man who is well versed in thinking outside of the box, and that's a skill we're going to need for what is coming in the very near future. Steve, how are you, sir?
Greetings, gentlemen. Good to see you all, boys. Doing very well, actually. I've been working hard behind the scenes. Got lots of topics to touch on, lots of solutions, maybe some comments as well on a few of the topics, for example, more like the spiritual side, maybe. I feel myself wanting to comment on a lot of what E. Michael Jones has been talking about as well. But yeah, good to be here, ready to rock and roll.
Okay, great. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in with the first question for Steve, man?
Well, Steve, I'm curious to hear some of your observations from the first 2 hours. I know you were patiently waiting in the green room. So what are your thoughts on what's going on with the insane satanic agenda for this mass global injection of this unproven technology?
I think we need to go back to just touching on the spiritual war aspect, and where we were discussing the denial of logos. That was a key point there, the denial of logos, denial of wisdom. And I think that's kind of the point. And a lot of what the Jews do, in particular causing disease or poisoning wells, they try to affect the mind, not just to make it easier for possession purposes, but it's for the reasons of evil and sadism. So when they're denying logos, They're essentially trying to break down the mind, which is a reflection of what they should have, which is a conscience. That has been wiped through, in my opinion, pyramid trauma and brainwashing at Chabad schools and all the rest of the propaganda. In essence, they're psychic tyrants who are really wrong-thinkists projecting onto you their own sins. So if we can look at what Logos actually is, it kind of has a double reflection of what the Jew says in the external world to me and you, and what the program book, like the Talmud or whatever programs and meme sets have been inserted into them within their education, have a totally different internal voice to me and you. And it perverts their mind. It twists them. It makes them into sadists. So it's a spiritual war, because people like me and you, and this is often the criticism leveled at neoliberals, is they project onto other people what they themselves believe to be, in this case, most virtuous. And yeah, it isn't necessarily the case. So we have to remember that when we're going into the spiritual world beyond the psychic. We have to remember that it's a denial of logos for a reason, and that reason is sadism.
That's a very good point.
That's
yeah,
really a good point.
Yeah. Chris, are you still with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we lost your camera for some reason.
Oh, yeah, I just turned it off for a second. But, yeah, that's cool.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay, man, well, why don't you jump in with a question for Steve from the UK?
Well, I kind of appreciate his comment. What about he said about Charlie Giuliani, and wish that he had a little chat with Michael Jones. I kind of am probably on the same page as Steve, from what I can gather briefly from what he's has spoken. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of, say, incongruencies in religious indoctrinations, and they all seem to favor a certain group of people. And I wish that I would have gotten a little more of a chance to grill E. Michael Jones on this, but I almost feel that Christianity itself has been compromised as a control opposition in the same way that they do with any of the Abrahamic faiths or religions.
Can we comment on that, Chris? Can we just comment on
it.
That? So, for example, in CG's work, one of the things that brought me to the fore after the banks was the discovery with a timestamp that Akhenaten was Moses. And people like Richard Carrier and then Charles Giuliani, after he stopped being Christian with the Anti-Zionist League, Kunihamura, they decided to actually investigate a common thread going back, which is when Jesus, this composite hybrid figure of Judas Christos with the name Jesus of Nazarene, some random dead Jew on a stick, it actually went back to Tutmosis the second or third, and that's where we get the House of Israel, why it goes back to David, because the Hyksos nickname of these pharaohs in Palestine was a Hyksos word. So David literally transliterates as put, like Tutankhamun, for example, put, and DVD, it becomes T-U-T. So we have to look at, when he talked about Jesus, he was just really a sequence of Atenized bloodlines going through Akhenaten to Tutmosis the second, I believe, and then it goes back to Imhotep the third, who was Solomon. Now, if that's true, we can see sun worshippers moving in through from Sumeria into North Africa and Western Europe, using this sun worship as a vehicle. Indeed, it comes into Ireland. And when we move on towards like 400 BC with the Greco-Ptolemies, we see them following the Cairo. And the origin of the Catholic Church is at least 400 years before Jesus. And E. Michael Jones won't accept that. And indeed, I would postulate that the orthodoxy of the Catholic Church of the North isn't Thor or any gods brought by the blonde-haired, blue-eyed people to Scandinavia from Germany and Sweden. It's actually Tar. And it's been Tar for thousands of years, up until the sun worshippers decided to worship the sun and call it the Hidden One, which is Amun-Ra, hence Amun. So when we come up to Jesus' time and we talk about the Roman Catholic Church, and how the Romans were taken down, and indeed it's a very interesting period in British history, how the Latin western half of the Roman Empire fared up until they left Britain. It's a very, very interesting sequence of history, particularly to lines of sovereignty and church. But Charles Giuliani, he extrapolates and says the leaders after that Roman Empire turned Christian, and I would argue the assassination of Constantine stopped that line of Cairo transmission. All the leaders of these Christian sects scattered around these city ports, around the eastern Mediterranean, had big piles of dollar, and they were using them to co-opt the Roman system. Indeed, the Romans had many critiques of the Christian theology, and I see it as a takeover. It was a takedown in 450. And we see Charles Giuliani claiming that the Sposinoi of Jesus became the heads of state of Europe, kings and queens, for example, up until the Ashkenazi started fucking with that, the Habsburgs. And then we start to see the Sposinoi of James, Jesus' brother, apparently became the Red Cardinals and the bishops of the Roman Catholic Church, in fact, of Vatican. Am I surprised to see these front men, these Sposinoi, used as vehicles in this modern contact with Rothschild, in particular post 1890, where the Vatican pretty much gave their accounts away to Rothschild? They seem to be the ideal front men, because if you follow religion of Judaism for whites, you end up seeing the Queen as like God, because she's got Jesus's blood in her, and you've got the Queen's own kamikazes being indoctrinated, like not thinking, like fucking drones, because they're infected with a Sumerian false origin myth, and that's deliberately done so to undermine a racial origin myth of the forefathers.
Well, sure, and it's sort of a modern version of the divine right of kings in a way, and yeah. You know, it's funny,
yes,
yeah, and it's funny hearing E. Michael Jones and Charles Giuliani mentioned in the same sentence, because I respect both of their work, and boy, the sparks would fly if those two ever were to have a conversation. I'll tell you what, you know, but you know, I see validity in both points of view. You know, to be honest, I think there are some good, very important aspects to Christianity that you cannot completely separate Western society and Christianity, but conversely, there's no question that it's been taken over and subverted and used for nefarious purposes to some degree by the modern churches. There's no question about that. But Steve, maybe we could kind of move forward a little bit, and where I'd like to get your perspective on, you know, from across the pond, you know, what do you see in this whole election fiasco and the passing of the Trump era and the baton of power being handed over to Joey the Groper Biden? What's your take on that?
Money, theft of money, largest theft of money in all human history. That's what I see.
Well, expand on that, please. That's fascinating.
Okay, let me give you a little story then, a little bit of radio. Out in the wilderness, after that whole crap went on, Scorpio, I went to go and conquer my own bit of land and have a bit of legal knowledge. And I was pushing and fighting the planning officer. And I built my own little picket fence, little bit of land, little dream everyone holds on to. And one day, another Yorkshireman lived in the local village. And I went to go see this Yorkshireman. And knew people up in the establishment, and in the hospitality, as it happened, and we were exchanging stories, and he knew I was anti-banker. And one of his friends, one day, he brought down, after I knew him for a few months, was a guy from London. And I'm going to tell you the names, as I know them. And this guy was a guy called Nick, and he was a faggot. And he travelled from London, from all these gay orgy parties he'd been to. And he'd come to see me because he wanted to go smoke a joint. I'm there chatting to this gay faggot from London who'd mixed with all the upper establishment. Apparently, he was the rent boy of Princess Margaret's son. And I said, "Oh, right, okay." He says, is that normal for all of them, though? And he goes, "Yeah, absolutely all of them. All the males in the royal family have all got faggot lovers, right? And there's a huge transmission of HIV within the royal family because it's part of like a murder cult. They deliberately infect, and relating it to the vaccines here a little bit, they deliberately infect some of the disease because it gives them psychic leverage over that person. It makes them easier to break down and control." And I thought, all right, so you knew that. All right, I suddenly understood. He said, I told him about the bankers and what I was kind of known for and releasing every central bank on the planet. And he said, well, I've got a banking story for you. He says, do you know about the LIBOR interest rate scandal? And I go, yes, I do, actually. I actually followed that. And it led to the conviction of four people. He goes, well, the thing is, the guy who was in the dock, one of the defendants there, and they're all cokehead faggots, the bankers, by the way. All faggots, they're all coked up, yeah, all of them, obscene amounts of money. And he said that he was sleeping as a rent boy for one of the defendants in the LIBOR interest rate scandal. This was a scandal which was affected $350 trillion in derivatives. It formed a cartel with RBS in Scotland, run by London. And these guys were fixing the interest rates between the central banks of the whole planet in every country. Things like Barclays Bank were fined $200 million for that. Some serious, serious money involved. Billions and billions involved in payoffs in this. And he said to me, he said, not only did I sleep with the defendant who was subsequently convicted in that trial, he said, but I was also sleeping with the QC who prosecuted. So they'd, through this guy, they'd fixed that trial. So some guys got off. There was a £60 million fine somewhere, right? And literally hundreds of billions went missing. And apparently that was one of the triggers for the banking bailouts in 2008. And wow, all that money was being monetized, that debt, and being used to leverage the international interest rates by like 1% at a time. Now, story number two. I then knew someone out when I was in the cycle, around just before that, as it happened, about a year before that. And he used to work, funny enough, for Nathaniel Rothschild. And I was a chess player with this other woman. She was of the McMahon clan. So I go by clan, McDonald and Macara. And I was playing chess against him. And one of her friends was a guy called Dan Robertson, who worked in Queensland Street jurisdiction. And he used to tell me how he's cut his teeth with Nathaniel Rothschild dealing in the real estate market and how the Americans were trying to get their embassy on a real bit of land. And they were telling the Americans, you can have that land for the US Embassy in London, this, I think it's near Covent Garden somewhere, if you give us Virginia back. And these are the kind of conversations like Lord Westminster was having with the Americans at the time. And he said, well, for the bailout, Steve, he says, he wasn't like 3 trillion, which I said was the official public figure announced. He said it was 12 trillion British lost. And he said they stuffed it into a bank account, into a Scottish bank account, the same bank account that was used in the LIBOR interest rate scandal. Same bank account, by the way, where you find in RBS, where they stuffed £12 trillion of toxic debt in that and then subsequently used it to use and control a $350 trillion cartel pot syndicate. Now, who was in that? People like Nicola Sturgeon, Alex Salmond, an RBS banker, Alex Salmond, I think SNP. And Robertson, of who he spoke the perfect English accent, claimed to be of Pan Robertson, blah, fucking blah, and was running a mafia operation in LA. So these are real history of what actually happened. And you need Cy in order to complement your reading of what actually happened in real life. None of it, some of the truth, isn't written down.
Of course.
I'm sorry to say. So that's what I would say in terms of money, because 10 times later, 2020, I reckon he's the first quadrillionaire. If you do a bit of math, Rothschild has 1.4 quadrillion.
Okay.
That's the figure I put my finger on. This theft right now with COVID money and green money to come, the environmental emergency to be declared when Biden's the winner. I'm going to read something about Biden in a minute. All that money will be employed to roll out every single program at the same time they've been going on about, and we've been going on about for so many years, at the same time. It's going to hit us like a tsunami. He wants to be paid. He's the first quadrillionaire, wants to double his money every year.
Okay. Steve, you're kind of moving around a lot, and it's making your audio kind of be loud and then quiet. So just keep that in mind. And I want to kick the ball back over to Chris and Giuseppe, but we have a question from the chat room. What is a professional loiner, just briefly, and then I want to kick it over to Chris and Giuseppe.
If you like Kaiser Chiefs, predict the riot, you'll probably understand that. But a loiner is a person from Leeds, and the Romans used to call elves or Dalmatians, if it's Latinized, used to call them loiners, which meant riot or predict the riot.
Okay.
So that's the name. Like Manchester people are called Manx. Leeds people are called loiners.
Do you guys ever get into the Kaiser Chiefs? They're pretty sweet, man.
Oh, okay. I don't want to interrupt. I don't want to interrupt, but just briefly, please, we got to watch the F-bombs, okay? I just got a message from management. We got that's the one thing that we don't really like to have on the air here, okay? So other than that, everything's open field. And Chris, continue. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's my bad there. Yeah, I let those slip all the time. But, yeah, Kaiser Chiefs are awesome. Yeah, good stuff.
Number one, but
yeah. Every Day I Love You Less and Less. They got some good songs. Yeah, I've checked them out a few times. But, yeah, anyways, I appreciate what you're saying. Yeah, and what you're saying about the LIBOR thing is tip of the iceberg, because this goes into derivatives, Forex, COMEX, FICO. This is tied to, like, the 401k index funds that are inextricably tied to this COVID rollout 5G vaccine program, this nano tracking, tax cattle inventory, quantum analysis, AI control. This is very much spot on with what they have rolling out. And like you say, it's a blitz. It's coming out all at once. And the people behind this are arguably all marching in the same organized lockstep direction. And the citizens need to actually realize this and set down the two-party system and even the sense of nation states or whatever and rise against this.
Can I just comment there quickly, Chris?
Jump in. Quickly? Yeah, go for it.
When we talk about the denial of logos, I was looking at the AI in China of the Chinese AI girlfriend and how it's been censored by the Chinese state because it's racist and it's not allowed to talk about politics or sex, apparently, this robot. And all the young Chinese males were rebelling against the Chinese government because they take away their AI girlfriend. So they're not going to be coming at you from an angle of logos. They're going to come at you from your base emotions, from the subconscious world where you can be affected without necessarily you knowing. And you become addicted to that fixation pattern. So beware of possession, beware of the demon, and it is a demon. And we have to beware that the devil will try to seduce you and tempt you first, right? When they get all violent, all that, that's because you're doing something right. But first, they'll smile at you, and they'll make friends with you and introduce you. And that's what I want to warn people against, temptation.
Good stuff.
Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Well, it's interesting, you know, to tie together the cautions of the great E. Michael Jones and now the great UK Steve. Essentially, what you've got going on is beyond the dogmatic pursuits of the great religions, is it boils down to good versus evil, the divine versus the profane. And what's funny in my mind is that the average goyim cattle lacks the self-discipline, lacks the spiritual discipline, lacks the emotional discipline, likes the mental discipline to live a moral code. And so they really need some type of rules and religion. It's sad to say they don't deserve all the freedoms that they're being given. you know, there's so few people I've met that are truly spiritual, truly trained minds, truly disciplined emotionally, and a real man or a real woman. And you've got these Satanists, these Talmudic chicken swingers, who are pushing on the weak-minded goyim cattle all of the seven deadly sins, all of this gender fluidity horse shit. And it's just so offensive to me. And since I wanted to ask E. Michael Jones that, but I can ask Steve, what will it take for the average goyim cattle to learn that kind of discipline? I mean, do we need some type of rigidity of the old Catholic Church before Vatican II to rein these deviants in who do not deserve the rights to claim that they're gender fluid, who do not deserve the rights to riot in the streets for a phony cause such as Black Lives Matter? I mean, I could go on and on, but I'll turn it over to UK Steve.
What we need to do is to tell the public, all the people listening to this, because we don't control who listens to the program. All we can do is to tell them to take heart, to cultivate that spirit. No fear. We stand together and we move forward. Right? You take heart. It's from that space we can face anything. I think the public needs to start with that. And then once we start with that, the little guy, and it's the little guy who's going to win.
Right? Yeah, we have to recultivate the warrior spirit of our ancestors. I think that's very important, because this is not the time to be afraid. This is not the time to be meek, and this is not the time to comply with the wishes of tyrants.
The week will die off, in my opinion. I think we're going to find a great revealing. Already half the population wearing masks over here and half aren't. I'm doing a count every day. I'm quacking at people now instead of shouting at them. They're saying quack, 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 quack every time I see a mask on them. And well, you have to do that, and you have to keep an eye on it. And you can roughly see the numbers and the demographics as well. The number of fat women, number of old, sick people. All these people, I don't think they're going to survive. I really don't. And neither do I think it's up to us to save them either. And I think we need to prioritize who we are going to fight for. We have to know thyself what we're going to fight for.
That's an excellent point.
So I'm going to give you 10. I want to read you 10 points to do with identity of self-sovereignty. And I think I need to take this away with you, right?
Okay, but Steve, let's just hold off on that, because we're at the bottom of the hour break here. And let's let that pass, and then we'll pick that up. And I just remind everyone that Revolution Radio is 100% listener funded. So come aboard revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. Become a Patreon member. Okay, welcome back to the final half hour of Operation Scorpio. We're here with UK Steve, Giuseppe from the District of Criminals, and Chris Weinert, a.k.a. Brutal Honesty. And Steve, right before the bottom of the hour, you're going to read 10 points of something you thought was significant. So why don't you go ahead, man?
Very quickly. So this is from a document, The Path to Self-Sovereignty. And it's by a guy called Chris.
Okay, welcome.
Chris Allen is his name. Now, it's very brief. It's an essential part of my new identity box online. It's a self-contained, anonymous, encrypted identity box, which is the way forward for encrypting and have an unstoppable way for all our files, right? And it's based on what we consider to be identity. So when I use the word identity, I want you to think Catholic, white, whatever you think that may be, soul, spirit, and see if you can just change that word. So I'm going to go to number one. These principles are existence. Users must have an independent existence. Any self-sovereign identity is ultimately based on the ineffable I. That's at the heart of identity. It can never exist wholly in digital form. This must be the kernel of self that is upheld and supported. Self-sovereign identity simply makes public and accessible some limited aspects of the I that already exist. Number two, control. Users must control their identities. Subject to well-understood and secure algorithms that ensure the continued validity of an identity, its claims, the user is the ultimate authority on their identity. They should always be able to refer to, update it, or even hide it. They must be able to choose celebrity or privacy as they prefer. This does not mean that a user controls all of the claims on their identity. Other users may make claims about a user, but they should not be central to the identity itself. Number three, access. Users must have access to their own data. A user must be able to easily retrieve all the claims and other data within his identity. There must be no hidden data and no gatekeepers. This does not mean that a user can necessarily modify all the claims associated with his identity, but it does not mean that they should be aware of them. It also does not mean that users have equal access to others' data, only to their own. Number four, transparency. Systems and algorithms must be transparent. Systems used to administer and operate a network of identities must be open, both in how they function, in how they are managed and updated. Algorithms should be free, open source, well-known, and as independent as possible of any particular architecture. Anyone should be able to examine how they work. Number five, persistence. Identities must be long-lived. Preferably, identities should last forever, or at least for as long as the user wishes. Though private keys might indeed be rotated and data might need to be changed, the identity remains. In the fast-moving world of the internet, this goal may not be entirely reasonable, so at least identities should last until they've been updated by newer identity systems. This must not contradict a right to be forgotten. Users should be able to dispose of an identity if they wishes, and claims should be modified or removed as appropriate over time. To do this requires a firm separation between an identity and its claims. It can't be tied forever. Number six, portability. Information and services held about identity must be transportable. Identities must not be held by a singular third-party entity, Google, eBay, anyone, yeah, PayPal. Even if a trusted identity that's expected to work in the best interest of the user, the problem is that entities can disappear, and on the internet, most eventually do. Regimes may change, users may move to different jurisdictions. Transportable identities ensure that the user remains in control of his identity no matter what, no matter where, and it can also improve an identity's persistence over time. Number seven, interoperability. Identities should be as widely usable as possible. Identities are of little value if they only work in limited niches. The goal of the 21st century digital identity system is to make identity information widely available, crossing international boundaries to create global identities without losing user control. Thanks to persistence and autonomy, these widely available identities can then become continually available. Number eight, consent. Users must agree to the use of their identity. Any identity system is built around sharing that identity and its claims, and an interoperable system increases the amount of sharing that occurs. However, sharing of data must only occur with the consent of the user. Other users, such as an employer, a credit bureau, or a friend, might present claims. User must still offer consent for them to become valid. Note that this consent might be interactive. It must still be deliberate and well understood. Nine, minimization. Disclosure of claims must be minimized. When data is disclosed, that disclosure should involve the minimum amount of data necessary to accomplish the task. Minimum amount. For example, if a minimum age is called for, then the exact age should not be disclosed. And if only an age is requested, then the more precise date of birth should not be disclosed. This principle can be supported with selective disclosure, range proofs, and other zero-knowledge techniques. The non-correlatability is still very hard, perhaps impossible, task. best we can do is to use minimization to support privacy as best as possible. And finally, number 10, protection. The rights of users must be protected. When there is a conflict between the needs of the identity network and the rights of individual users, then the network should err on the side of preserving the freedoms and rights of the individuals over the needs of the network. To ensure this, identity authentication must occur through independent algorithms that are censorship resistant and force resilient, and that they are run in a decentralized manner.
Yeah. Decentralization is absolute key. And those are some interesting ground rules for a future way of interacting. And I want to toss the ball back over to Chris, but I just want to read a comment from the chat room, just very briefly, that I think is a significant one. Ben is saying, previous guests, Vicki Davis and Mark Anderson, had some interesting points that shed light on this global agenda. Neat to see how these pieces fit together from different angles. I think that's an important perspective, because it's not about believing all the words or everything that one particular guest says, but seeing it, how it does all fit together. That's a very important point, and I thank you for it. Chris, why don't you go ahead with a question or comment?
Well, I appreciate what the comment is there from the audience or the chat about that. Yeah, it's good to hear from other people around the world and just get a feel for their perceptions and how they not only perceive this, but what the experiences they're going through and how they can relate this towards the knowledge and benefit of others. So it's really good to see humanity come together and really setting down their political or other differences, religious, national, whatever, and coming together, not only because we're facing a common enemy that's trying to exterminate us, but also it's good to kind of use this weapon against them and to use the exchange of information while it's still available in the manner we have. So I feel blessed to be alive in this time and place, and I think the information that's coming out has been thousands of years in the making, and I think everybody's here for a reason to do exactly what's going on right now.
Well, that's a great point, Chris. Steve, what's your reaction?
I think we need to form a new list. I think we need a list of every synagogue on the planet.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Precarious, but a good one. Giuseppe, why don't you jump? Version.
Yeah, I think that Steve's 10-point plan is vital to break this boot on the throat that these techno nerds have on free speech. And, you know, I mean, he's doing some remarkable things. He's also a gifted a computer wizard and coder, and he's literally trying to, you know, make this a reality. And we all need to. I mean, why the hell is anybody on Facebook anymore? There's other things like Parler, and they're popping up daily. You got to decentralize, and you know, I just wish, instead of all these Talmudic parasites being able to fund these giant things like YouTube, where are the free speech YouTubes? There's plenty of people with a lot of money who could bank this stuff and get some real servers and clouds going to support this. I really wish they would step up.
I think we also have to keep our eye on Iran. I think a lot of this money gets spent on war, quite frankly. You know, arms dealing loves it, lending money above sight. I think we've got maybe something coming up in January with the anniversary of the assassination of Soleimani. And I think that some of the things I'm seeing on the battle maps, that I think there could be a kicking off in the early part of next year. And it could be Trump's last hurrah for Bibi Netanyahu. And when I see Trump, I just see someone who's working for Chabad. I don't really see someone who was fighting for an alt-right agenda. I don't see that. I don't believe that. I've never believed that. As soon as I see a hand on the Wailing Wall. So we did see new cruise missiles being fired at Syria. Are they going to take on the Shia Crescent? Are they just going to give up the whole Middle East and the oil pipelines to the Russians and come under Russian and Shia influence? I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see that kind of spark. So you get like a left-right punch, left-punch COVID, right punch warfare. And when we get to have our nice little war, lo and behold, we'll have a load of environmental legislation pushed through whilst we're having a war in the Middle East with Iran.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's hard to say on that one. It seems like I've kind of saw, you know, the possibility of a war more as like a alternative plan. If the COVID agenda somehow craps out, they can bring on a world war and make it a really nasty one to give further cause that, oh, we have to have a global government. We can never allow this to happen again.
Lots of bioweapons, Scorpio. The perfect excuse to say, well, you've got to be vaccine now. There's loads of bioweapons going off.
Right. Yeah, they're waging war without even firing a shot in terms of, like, mobilizing troops. This is, like, a whole new term of warfare, a technocratic bio-warfare that's going on.
How do you peg? I also like to see the focus on AI. You mentioned and touched upon AI. When we're forming like citizen defense teams or citizen support teams, self-defense, law, autarky, we could have like coding with that, and we can support each other with different skills in different ways. And we're going to be coming against very clever AI who will be giving orders to stupid slave pig drones. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen the police. They've got an app on their phone which tells them what the law is. They don't actually know. There's so many. So the app actually tells them what the law is. Now, can you imagine AI factored into that real time, telling the policeman what to do with all the resources, essentially turning them into a paramilitary?
The Judge Dredd or some utopian movie, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's Minority a question. Report. In the chat room, Chatsy Revolution Radio from Do It Dirt, and it's a question for Steve. Both the fathers of James Holmes, Aurora shooting neuroscience graduate student, U of C Denver, of Colorado Denver, and Adam Lanza, Sandy Hook, were involved in the LIBOR interest rate rigging scandal. Any thoughts on that?
Wow, yeah. And I think the common root is Satanism in the Jews. So when you've got Jews trying to co-opt whites and you're trying to spot who's the non-white internally, usually it's Satanism. So they've already co-opted them, and there'll be a network of those Satanists to various degrees of co-option all around the whole world, in every country, wherever there's a central bank. So those Satanism people are kind of like the face of the indigenous population or the makeup of that population. Your Freemasonry is just a cover for Satanism, the worship of Yolda Boath.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and the Jews push on that, yeah, because they're essentially showing the corruption of man to God. They're saying, look at these men, look at these Satanists, yeah, we have to use usury to control these demonic men, right? So Satanism is the vehicle, but it's at the service of the Jew, and the Jew actually worships not Satan, but he worships a transhumanist, androgynous god, an old one, and Yolda Boath was kind of like the demon gods that we've got now, but they want to go back to this androgynous god before it was shattered into a thousand shards, right?
That's interesting. Yes, the old gods and the new. Yeah, exactly. Well, Steve,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, maybe you could give us a little update on what's going on with the vaccine agenda there in the UK. You know, I couldn't help but notice that the first man vaccinated in England was named William Shakespeare, you know, and if I didn't know better, I think this is some kind of script, you know, that they're reading from. What's going on with the vaccine agenda, and where do you see it going from your perspective in the UK?
I think the Shakespeare thing is a clue to Kabbalah. I think it's a clue to Kabbalism from Elizabeth the First. Yeah. Where the Jews for the first time managed to push the Zohar into the UK. So you start to see a lot of esotericism, like British Israel being formed, which is why I'm not Christian identity again, being formed under Elizabeth the First and sort of coming to a polished end with the Ashkenazi Orangemen. So I just wanted to talk about what you asked me, which was the vaccine issue in the UK. I think that they will be pushing out, firstly, softly, but they'll make life impossible for the vaccines. I think they're going to be rolling out all these vaccines to people. No one's going to take it. I think there's going to be a rebellion. I think Boris is going to fall. Yeah. I think they're going to crash out of Brexit. I think there's going to be all kinds of madness going on in this country, to be quite frank with you. I'm not sure they're going to be able to carry it off, because I don't think people just don't believe the government here. I've got more confidence in the public cynicism than I do their education. They instinctively know the government's bullshit because it smells of shit. Right? Okay? And it's very hard to sort of fool the public all of the time, isn't it? So I'm not sure they're going to get their program through. Does that mean they can't cause a whole heap of shit, that they're not going to start targeting the elderly or NHS staff, public sector workers, for example, with forced mandatory vaccines, you know, to continue their employment and pay their mortgages? I can see them try.
Yeah.
I think E. Michael Jones is right. We have to resist the vaccine physically. Sorry, but that's a physical line. You touch me physically, I touch you back. Simple as that. You pick up a gun, absolutely. I pick up a bazooka.
Well, absolutely. And I truly believe that, you know, this vaccine agenda, it's not going to be a one-time deal. Like, okay, you got your COVID shots and now you're good for life. It ain't going to work like that. If they can manage to push this through, it's going to be, you know, a yearly thing. Oh, the virus is mutated. You need a new vaccine this year. It's COVID of number 25 now, you know, and so it'll just be an endless foray of vaccining. And I think that with each round, it'll get more virulent and more deadly, because depopulation is certainly part of the agenda here.
No doubt.
Sterilization as well. So it actually makes women sterile, one of the vaccines. I believe it's the British Pfizer vaccine.
And Ben Stembridge in the YouTube chat has the question, what is the word on the vaccine rollout in China? I figured they would be the first of all the countries to get it. They are going full speed on, Ben. They've chosen, from what I've read, the Pfizer vaccine, and their plan is in the next year to inject 1 billion Chinese citizens with it. That's half their total population, I think, isn't it? 2 billion.
Oh, it's more. It's about 1.4 billion right now in China.
They're going to try to get almost 80% saturation. Wow. Well, if anybody can do it, the Chinese can.
Oh, sure. In China, you know, they don't play around with this notion that you have rights or that, you know, anything like that. Or we have elections. No, they don't play that game. It's that you do what you're told, you're getting a bullet in your head. And that's part of the reason why the globalists are so enamored with the Chinese system. And, you know, it's already set up in China where you do everything with your phone. And I saw a video recently from a girl saying that they already have it set up that in order to get into public buildings, public spaces, you're going to have a certain code on your telephone that you're going to have to swipe in order to enter. So that's already in play in China.
Yeah, man, it's they're going all in. The internationalist Jew, it definitely serves dark evil beyond space and time, and they literally view the 7.3, I've said this before, billion humans as goyim cattle. And what do you do with cattle when you own them? Well, you inoculate them and you chip them. And then you pen them in, and there you go. That's their plan for the goyim cattle. And like Steve said, you have to resist. Do not take this shot. Because you know why they skipped under this scamdemic, this creating nothing, something out of nothing, making the nano terrorist out of the common cold. COVID is nothing more than the common cold, which is ubiquitous in nature. And now these weak-minded normies and simpletons are, oh, I can't wait to take the vaccine to get my life back to normal. Trust me, the reason they skipped the animal trials, because it kills the animals and it's going to kill you as well.
Yeah, and so many people are thinking, hey, as soon as we get the vaccine, life goes back to normal. And, you know, just the other day, I heard an expert talking about this, and they were saying, look, this vaccine's a great thing, but don't think we're going to be able to give up on masking or social distancing. No, we're going to have to keep doing that for at least another year. So get ready. This is just beginning, and they're going to keep unveiling this thing slowly but surely.
Right.
Chris, why don't you jump in, man?
Well, I think the only way to go back to normal is to go after these guys that have tried to create this new crazy normal, this absurdity,
right,
and to put them to the justice for the malevolence that they've caused, and really to call this out by the facts and get to the truth with this, because ultimately what is going on is something beyond sinister. And the fact that half the world is running around shoving people out of the way to get in line as Judas goats for this vaccine, to me, that is just beyond puzzling. I can't see that many people doing this. I can't see that many people voting for Joe Biden either. So I don't know. But right. Crazy new world that's going on. I can't believe it's happening.
Man, another great comment from the chat room. How to control the masses in one simple year's time. There you go. That's the COVID agenda, baby.
Yeah, think about this. You know, they say, Quigley said it, they can accomplish more in 5 years of war than they can in 50 years of peace. Well, they accomplished more in 5 months of pandemic than they have in 5 years of any kind of war.
Good point.
Like a blitzkrieg.
Yeah, it's so true.
I think we also have to sort of think about the values. A lot of it has been here quite a while. And four of the values that influenced me when I was at TIU wasn't necessarily an ideology. It was truth, honor, fortitude, resolve. And I still remember it all these years. That's why we're here. We are the fighters. And we have to move forward and be realistic. We have to have better tech than them. And we have to anticipate what they're doing and prepare people the best we can. And we have to save those who deserve to save because they want to live. And just don't fall for the bullshit, because I think we've been sold bullshit for thousands of years since the start of the precious metals trade, start of the copper age.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, we're coming down to the final few minutes of the show. I want to just kind of go around the round table and get everyone's final thoughts. Chris, why don't you start off, man?
Well, I got a lot of thoughts. Maybe we'll just carry it on to my show later on, Studio B with Brutal Honesty, or and maybe continue this conversation for 2 more hours. But, yeah, good stuff. I think we're really at the tip of the spear of this, and I'm glad to be a part of this. Thanks.
Giuseppe?
I think that this is a literal war, a hot war now of good, the divine versus evil, the profane. And the listeners and viewers have to understand there is no political solution. You're not going to vote your way out of this. There is no judicial solution. The Jew has taken over the judicial system. There's only one solution. If you want to protect your children, your family, you know what to do. There's not that many of them. They need to be removed from this reality. And there's people with a lot of skills, the wetworks types, and it's time for you to step up for the innocents, for the decent people who don't have those skills. It's time to take these subhumans off the chessboard.
Yeah, and every time I see a little kid with a mask on, it really breaks my heart, man. Exactly. It's a horrible thing to see. Steve, final thoughts, sir.
Final thoughts, two things. people in prison, people who have fallen, MCP, Nick Spiro, all the rest of them. Number two, take your masks if you're wearing one. If you're hearing this and you're wearing a mask, take it outside a synagogue, burn it in front of them all when they're there, and then walk off. And keep doing that, millions of you, burning your masks outside the synagogue. That's what I'll send them a message.
Yes, this is going to take resistance on a mass level. Compliance is only going to lead to slavery. Things are not going to go back to normal as long as we keep complying and playing along in this reality that they're trying to script for us. And believe me, this is a dark reality that they're creating. We cannot go along with it, guys.
Amen.
No doubt.